Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Kedushin Daf Lamed Ches. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage, and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 15 lines from the top of Daf Lamed Ches. In our previous shiur, mention was made of Shiva Ba'Adar, the 7th of Adar, being the day that Moshe Rabbeinu was Nifter, that he passed away on that date. The opening piece of Gemara will focus on the date Shiva Ba'Adar, not only as the date of Moshe Rabbeinu's demise, but also as the date of his birth. Marking-wise, you will notice in the Gemara text a house shape. On the side, under the Nosei / Mivneh heading, the Nosei, the topic heading, Mivneh, structural note, you'll notice a house is featured, and we've written Hoichochois proofs Shebezayin Ador Meis Moshe Vegam Nolad Bo, that on the 7th of Ador Moshe Rabbeinu not only passed away but also was born on that date. And now the Gemara Tanya Idoch B'Shiva Ba'Ador Meis Moshe B'Shiva Ba'Ador Nolad. On the 7th of Ador Moshe died, and on that same date, 120 years earlier, he was born. Minayin Shebeshiva Ba'Ador Meis. You'll notice, if you skip down a number of lines, the second house marking is preceded with, again, the question of Minayin, but there, the issue is Shebeshiva Ba'Ador Nolad Moshe. So, we first deal with Minayin Shebeshiva Ba'Ador Meis. From where do we know that on the 7th of Adar, Moshe Rabbeinu died? Do note, by the way, that all of this Gemara is under one long point marking, long nekuda. Shenemar, the pasuk says, "Vayomos shom Moshe Eved Hashem." Uksiv, in at the end of Sefer Dvarim, the pasuk describes that Moshe Rabbeinu died, and it says, "Vayivku bnei Yisrael Moshe ba'arvus moiv shloishim yom." There was a mourning period of 30 days. Uksiv vahi achrei mois Moshe Eved Hashem, and then the pasuk in the book of Joshua, which is essentially a continuation of the called the Torah story, it says thereafter Moshe Rabbeinu died. Uksiv Moshe avdi meis viato kum avor, and at that point the Almighty instructed Yehoshua to get ready for crossing over into the land of Israel. Uksiv Avru Bekerev Machne Vitzavu Es Ha'om Lemor Hachinu Lochem Tzedo Ki Be'oish Shloishis Yomim Tavru Es Hayarden. So that when the Almighty instructed Yehoshua to get ready, he mentioned that in another 3 days you will be crossing over. So far we've accounted for a 30-day mourning period, and now a 3-day we'll say waiting period or preparing period. Uksiv ve'omolu minayardin basor l'chodesh harishon. And when they finally crossed over, we see a date, and it says the date that says on the 10th of the first month. The first month in the cycle of months is the month of Nisan. The last month is Adar. So on the 10th of Nisan, they finally crossed into Eretz Yisrael, which was at the time referred to as Eretz Canaan. They crossed in at the 10th. So what you have to do now is simply roll back 33 days, and we will arrive at the day of Moshe's death. Say mehen shloishim u'shloshi yomim limafreya. Subtract 33 days backwards or retroactively. Ha'olamadata, and if you do that, you will learn shebeshiva ba'ador meis Moshe. on the 7th of Adar, Moshe died. So if you count from the 7th of Adar to the end of the month of Adar, you will find 23 days, and then 10 more days of Nisan, 33 days. And that's what we just calculated. So by calculating back from the 10th of Nisan, 33 days back, you've discovered that he died on the 7th of Adar. Uminayin shebeshiva ba'Adar noilad Moshe. From where do we know that on the 7th of Adar, Moshe Rabbeinu was born? Shenemar, the Pasuk says, Vayoyim Raleim, Ben Meo v'yesrim shono nochi hayoyim, lo uchal oid lotzeis v'lovoy. Now this Pasuk was stated by Moshe Rabbeinu on the day that he died. So it says that I am 120 years of age, hayom, today, I am 120 years of age, and lo uchal oid lotzeis v'lovoy. Without translating it, literally means I cannot function anymore in my leadership capacity. And hence, it's my time to leave, and hence we have a reference to the day of Moshe Rabbeinu's death. She'ein tamud lomar hayom. The Pasuk didn't need to say that he's on that day 120 years. What do we learn from the Torah's emphasis that it was on that day? Ma tamud lomar hayom. So what does it teach us? Melamed she'HaKadosh Baruch Hu yoshiv u'memali shnoisem shel tzadikim miyoyim liyoyim u'mechidish l'chidish. From here we see that the Almighty, when computing or allocating a life to a righteous individual, he does so in a, we'll say, a complete fashion, where from the day of his birth to the day of his death, from the month of his birth to the month of his death, the same time, the same month and date that he was born will be the same month and date of his death. Shenemar es mispar yomecha amalei. Your number of days, your number of years, I will make complete. So in Moshe Rabbeinu's case, we speak about a complete 120 years. So that if he was nifter, if he passed away on the 7th of Adar, that was a completion of 120 years, indicating that he must have been born on the 7th of Adar, 120 full years earlier. As we go on in the Gemara, we have a Tanaic source, and you can see this Tanaic source we featured Rav Shimon bar Yochai, and later on the bottom line, Rav Elazar Rav Shimon, the son of Rav Shimon bar Yochai. This source goes till the upper lines of Amud Beis, and on the side of the Gemara, under the Nosei, we've indicated the following. L'Rashbi, Rashbi is Rav Shimon ben Yochai, Gimel Mitzvahs, there are three commandments, Shalom Rosh and Stav Aleim B'Knisos Anoretz, even though they were commanded to fulfill them upon entrance into the land, Nohago Yisgam B'Chutz Loretz, they're binding outside the land of Israel as well. This ties into our previous shiur, where we try to indicate that those mitzvahs that are relevant to the land are limited to Eretz Yisrael. We saw exceptions, and Rav Shimon bar Yochai continues in that same vein. So he mentions there are three mitzvahs that even though the commandment to fulfill them is we'll say land related. They were commanded upon entrance to Eretz Yisrael to fulfill these mitzvahs. They are Chodosh, Kilayim, and Orla. We've spoken about what these are many times in our recent Shiurim, so no need to review what they are, but those three mitzvahs, Chodosh, Kilayim, and Orla, are going to be practiced, according to Rav Shimon bar Yochai, outside the land of Israel as well. Rav Elazar Rav Shimon, which is Benosh Rav Shimon bar Yochai, his son, Chilek Aloviv, V'sever De'enon Noyagis Elo Beretz Yisrael. He is of the opinion that these three mitzvahs have relevance only to the land of Israel. They're not binding upon a Jew outside of Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara, Tanya. Rav Shimon bar Yochai Omer, Shalosh Mitzvahs, Nitztav Yisrael B'Knisas Loretz. There are three mitzvahs, and we itemize them. Chodosh, Kilayim, and Orla, that the Jews were commanded to fulfill only upon their entrance into the land. V'noya goes bein baretz bein b'chutz laretz. And nevertheless, they're binding upon Jews in the land of Israel and outside the land of Israel as well. V'hu hadin she'inhagu. And logic would say that that should be the case. The Rashi, halfway down the narrow lines, he says, V'hadin she'inhagu ha'chodosh mufurish bo'i moshav. The mitzvah of Chodosh, the prohibition of benefiting from new grains until the 16th of Nisan, is stated explicitly as something binding in all locations, because the Torah uses the word Moshav, B'chol Moshvot Seichem, wherever you dwell, because Sovar, and Rav Shmuel Chayyim is of the opinion that that word Moshav is Kol Mokom Shatem Yoshev Mashma. So once we know that Chodosh is binding outside the land of Israel, making, of course, that assumption that Moshav means wherever you dwell. That, of course, was a major topic of controversy in our previous Shiurim. But he is taking that stance, that Moshav means wherever you are. So once we know scripturally that Chodosh is binding all over, I can conclude through logic the next two mitzvahs, that's numbers two and three, that they certainly will be binding all over. And the logic is as follows. Uma chodosh she'ein isuro isur oilom v'ein isuro isur hano v'yesh heter l'isuro. 3 points of leniency that apply to chodosh. It's not an isur oilom. Chodosh, the grains, the new grains are prohibited, but only till the 16th of Nisan. They're not permanently prohibited. And there's no, even if you harvested the new grains before the 16th of Nisan, nevertheless, you can sell them, you can use them. They're not osur bahano, they're not prohibited in benefit. They're not something that you have to destroy. And v'yesh heter l'isuro, that means that on the 16th of Nisan itself, the Isur, the prohibition, becomes permitted. So you see 3 points of leniency. I should point out this last point, V'yesh Heter L'Isuro, Rashi says, V'yesh Heter L'Isuro, U'v'yoyim Shisha Osar Atzmo, on the 16th of Nisan itself, Isuro Mutar. It's prohibition, the prohibition that applied to those new grains becomes rescinded. Im yesh omer korev, if the omer sacrifice, that's a barley grain offering, is offered, that barley grain offering in the Beis HaMikdash enables the population, the general population, to benefit from the new grains. And yet, noheg bein baretz bein b'chutz laretz. It's binding not just in the land of Israel, but outside as well. We continue with the next two mitzvahs, kilayim, she'isuro isrolam. On the 3 points of leniency that were relevant to Chodosh, we find those very points presented in a restrictive fashion, in a strict machmir approach with regard to kilayim. She'isuro Isuron, Isrolim, Kilayim. Imagine you had planted a grain and grape seed in the same hole, and a vine started sprouting forth. That vine is usur permanently. The Isuron, Israno, and the vine, the grapes, are prohibited to even benefit from. Not only is it prohibited to eat them, but you cannot sell them or use them for any beneficial purpose. V'ein heter li'isuron. And at no point does the prohibition become allowed. Ein odin shinagu bein baretz bein b'chutz laretz. If Chodosh had those 3 points as being lenient, Kilayim, which has those very 3 points with stringency, certainly it will be binding not only in the land of Israel but also outside. With regard to points Beis and Gimel, Orla is similar to Kilayim. Orla is not something we can describe as Isuro, Isur Oilam, because Orla is prohibited only for the first 3 years of the tree's life. And the fourth year and afterwards, fruit that that particular tree produces is permitted. Okay, so there's, but at two of the 3 points of stringency that we found by Kilayim apply to Orla as well. So that too would be Kavachomer binding in Chutzlaretz. Once we know that Chodosh is binding in Chutzlaretz, so that Orla will also certainly be binding, prohibited in Chutzlaretz. Reb Lozer, Rabbi Shimon Oimer. We continue at the top of Omid Beis. Kol mitzvah shenitztavu Yisrael kodem knisasan laretz. All mitzvahs that Jews were commanded to fulfill before their entrance to the land, we call those choyves haguf. They're not land related. You're commanded to fulfill them even before entering the land. Noheges bein baretz bein b'chutz laretz. Those are binding in the land and outside the land. La'achar knisas laretz, those mitzvahs that we were commanded to fulfill only after entrance to the land, eina neheges ela baretz. Those mitzvahs are binding only in the land of Israel. Those are what we called choyves hakarka, or mitzvahs hatluyas baretz. Chutzmin, with the exception of hashmotas ksofim, v'shiluach avodim. Hashmotas ksofim is the forgiving of debts after the Shemitah year passes. So at the conclusion of every seventh year, every Shemitah year, outstanding loans are canceled. That's Hashmotas Ksofim. Shiluach Avodim, when the Yovel year arrives, so all slaves that had Nirtza, had their ears bored beyond their 6 years of work, well, they're sent free when the Jubilee year arrives, the 50th year in the Jubilee 50-year cycle comes. Even though these mitzvahs are commanded after they entered the land, they're still binding in the land and outside the land as well. Now this source, the end of this source, is superficially is very difficult to understand. How can you describe, and the Gemara will ask this question, how can you describe Shemitas Ksochem and Shiluach Avodim as being land-based, because as the source says, they're commanded only after entering the land. Are they not chovas gavra? Are they not, in fact, personal focused mitzvahs upon the individual, not upon the land? Has nothing. These mitzvahs of loan cancellation and freeing of slaves have nothing to do with the land or tithing from produce or anything of the like. The Gemara will ask these questions. There are in fact two questions. One regarding Hashmotas Ksofim. You'll notice in our marked Gemaras, a diamond appears immediately, Hashmotas Ksofim, and then halfway down the page you see Shiluach Avodim on the side of the Gemara under our Nosei / Mivneh heading. We've written where the diamond is featured, Kushyos Avod Dikotani. These are questions on that which the source said, Hashmotas Ksofim v'Shiluach Avodim. They were commanded to fulfill these after their entrance to the land. The mashma, that gives us the feeling, she'enon choyves haguf, that they're not personal obligations. V'ze'eno, then that's simply not true. They're not land obligations. They are choyves haguf. They're obligations upon the individual, regardless of land. So now the Gemara. Hashmotas ksofim choyves hagufi. The cancellation of loans is a personal obligation. One must forgive loans after 7 years. And as such, they were commanded to fulfill them, seemingly, before entrance to the land. The source said that they were commanded only after entering the land. But once I identify Hashmotas Ksofim as Chovas Aguf, you would assume that that would be something commanded before entering the land. Rashi, on the second line from the top, says, Chutz me'ashmotas k'safum l'kamei porach. Later, the Gemara later, at this point, is where we are now in the Gemara text at the diamond. L'kamei porach ho'nami nitztavo leo kodem l'chein. Hashmotas k'safum is something they would have been commanded before entering the land. Da'achayvas agufi. It's a personal obligation. Umay chutz. Why, then, does the source say, except for... You know, giving us the feeling that these are commanded after entering the land. Why would that be if it's a chovas aguf? The Gemara answers. It's true that it's a chovas aguf. However, the mitzvah doesn't come into practice until they actually entered the land. The Gemara says, "Desanya," was a lo nitzricha. That which it says that they were lo nitztavu kodim, they were not commanded before entering the land, elel chitanya, it's needed for what we see in the following source, desanya, Rebbe Oimer, vezeh dvar hashmita shamot. The Pasuk uses the word shmita in a double fashion, hashmita shamot. B'shtei shmita sakosim medaber. This Pasuk is alluding to two forms of shmita. Shmita is a word meaning desist. Desist from land activity, from cultivation, agricultural activities, and another desist from collecting loans. Achashmitas, karka v'achashmitas sofim. One is a stoppage regarding the land, and the other is a stoppage, a desisting from monies. And we say as follows: Bizman shato mishame karka, ato mishame sofim. When your mishame karka, when you practice the shmita of the ground, the agricultural shmita, then you're going to practice a cancellation of loans. Bizman shi'iyato mishame karka, when you're not practicing the stoppage of agricultural activity. For example, when they were in the desert, when the Jews were traveling the desert, there was no laws of shmita that applied. So iyato mishame k'safim, so there's no obligation of cancellation of loans. So that what was said above in the source regarding shmitas k'safim, even though it was commanded only after they entered the land, it nevertheless is binding both in Eretz Yisrael and Chutz Laretz. So we're pointing out that shmitas k'safim as being something binding upon you or obligatory, that set in only after they entered the land and started observing the laws of agricultural Shemitah. But make no mistake, as far as the Tanaic source above is concerned, even though the command is only after they entered the land, it doesn't mean that Shemitah's Ksafim is limited to Eretz Yisrael, as we indicated. The Gemara raises an alternative. The double expression of Hashmita Shamot maybe is telling me that where you do Shemitah's Karka, location, not time, time in history, but location, where you practice Shemitah's Karka, Atom Mishamei Ksofim, you practice the cancellation of loans. For example, outside the land of Israel, where there is no Shemitah practiced, so the result of that would be that even when they were observing Shemitah in Eretz Israel, outside of Eretz Israel, there would be no cancellation of loans, even during that era. So here we reject that. Talmud Lomar, Hi Kora Shemitah Lashem. Mikomakom. That pasuk indicates that Shemitah, and in the context of Shemitah's Ksafim, has relevance wherever you are. So we have a special Gzeres HaKosuv telling us that Shemitah's Ksafim is binding wherever you are, as far as not location where it applies, but when it applies, so that aspect of Shemitah Kesufim is tied into when Shemitah's Karka is observed. So when they were in the Midbar, or after the dispersion in the diaspora, there was no more Shemitah's Karka observed, so there would be no more Torah requirement of Shemitah's Kesufim, of forgiving of loans. Shiluach Avodim, the source above mentioned the freeing of slaves, Chovas Hagufhi, it's something that's not land related. Why then did the source above indicate that the tzivui, the obligation, is only after entrance into the land, which, as we said, gave us the feeling that it's a land related mitzvah? The Gemara answers, Salka Daita Chamina, Hayol Uksiv Ukrosim Dror Boretz, you shall proclaim freedom in the land. Boretz in, Bechutza Loretz Lo, I would have thought from that that it applies only to those that are enslaved in the land of Israel. An Eved Ivri, whose ear was bored after his 6 years of service, would be freed upon the arrival of the Jubilee year, the Yovel, the 50th year, but only in Israel. Talmud Lomar, Yovel hi, mikol makom. The Torah adds the expression, Yovel hi, wherever. Im kein ma Talmud Lomar boretz, so then if it's applicable wherever a Jewish slave has decided to remain until the Yovel year, why then does the Torah speak about a proclamation of freedom in the land? Bizman shahadror noeg boretz, noeg b'chutzarts. There's a interconnected relationship between the time, not location, but the time that it's binding in Eretz Israel. So then it's binding, it must be observed outside the land of Israel. Ein dror noeg boretz, if freedom is not practiced in the land of Israel. And the reason for that is that the laws of Yovel are dependent on the population, the majority of the population of the Jewish people being in Israel. If they're not, so there's no laws of Yovel that apply even in Eretz Israel. So that when Dror is not observed in the land, ein Dror noeg boretz, eino noheg b'chutzlaretz, so then it's not binding outside the land of Israel either. So that in order for the laws of Shiluach Avodim to be in practice, you have to have it being practiced in the land. So the source above that said, Ashmotas Ksofim Shiluach Avodim, even though they were commanded to be observed only after they enter the land, that's true. But don't take that phrase to mean that it's binding only in the land. As the source itself said, these mitzvahs are practiced, the Hashmatas Ksofim and Shiluach Avodim are practiced in the land and outside the land as well. As far as the reference to these mitzvahs being commanded only upon entering the land, that is a function of their respective Gzeres HaKosovs. We saw Hashmitas Shamot, when the Shemitah's Karka is observed in the land of Israel, so Shemitah's Kesufim is observed wherever. Likewise, when Shiluach Avodim is practiced in Eretz Israel, because the majority of the Jewish people are in Eretz Israel, so Shiluach Avodim will apply wherever as well. We continue in the Gemara, a marking involving a double underline. You can see on the side, under the Mivneh heading, highlights Hadgoshas Chodesh Orlo and Kilayim. These three mitzvahs will be highlighted. Tanan Hosom, regarding Chutzlaretz, Chodesh Oser Minatora B'chol Mokom, the prohibition of benefiting from the new grains until the 16th of Nisan applies on a Torah level, wherever you are. And that's a function of the word Moshvo Sechem, assuming or taking the position that Moshev means Kol Mokum Shatem Yoshim, wherever you are. And the word Moshe Seichem you find by Chodosh. Orla, halacha, v'akilayim midivrei sofrim. Orla, the prohibition of fruit trees during the first 3 years of the tree's fruit production. That is binding in Chutz La'aretz, and the term that's used is halacha. We can't explain that word yet. The Gemara will immediately deal with that when it asks the question of my halacha. And the third mitzvah, kilayim, the prohibition of mixed breeding, that's called midivrei sofrim, rabbinic. My halacha. What does halacha mean in the context of orla? So this is the question that's now going to be the basis of the upcoming discussion in the Gemara, which is introduced by a topic heading, the Nosei, which reads, Machloikis Amoroim, will see an Amoraic disagreement, Bebir Hadikotoni, Orla B'chutz La'aretz Halacha. Number one, Hilchus HaMedinta. Hilchus HaMedinta means the Jewish community started practicing this. Number two, Halacha L'Moshe Misinai, means an oral tradition dating back to the giving of the Torah. Halacha Moshe Misinai is a level of halachic observance that's in some respects is considered like a Torah level command. I'm not going to commit myself to say that is exactly what it is, but it's certainly much more binding or it's a higher level of obligation than something that we would term rabbinic. We're not making light, by the way, of something that's rabbinic, but in terms of a hierarchy of severity, something that's halacha Moshe Misinai carries more weight than something that is purely rabbinic. The Gemara, my halacha. What does the word halacha in the source regarding orla mean? Omer of Yehuda Omer Shmuel, Hilchus HaMedina. Hilchus HaMedina, we're not going to translate it, we'll simply describe that as something that the Jewish people practiced, accepted on themselves in Chutz La'aretz. Ula Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Ula quoting Rabbi Yochanan says, Halacha L'Moshe Misinai. It's an oral tradition dating back to the giving of the Torah. That what? That Orla is to be practiced outside the land of Israel as well. We have a question. You'll notice it's a long question. This question takes us till the second line from the top of Daf Lamed Tesamet Aleph. Omele Ula L'Rav Yehuda. Bishlama L'Didi D'Amino Halacha L'Moshe Misinai. I who categorized Orla as being Halacha L'Moshe Misinai in Chutz La'aretz. Hainu D'Shoni Lon Bein Sofek Orla L'Sofek Kilayim. One will be able to appreciate the different halachic attitude toward orla that is safek, a doubt concerning orla, versus a doubt concerning kilayim. Kilayim is only rabbinic, so that if you see in Tanaic sources dealing with these topics of safek orla and kilayim, if you see the sources dealing in a more restrictive fashion, a more stringent fashion regarding Sofek Orla, don't be surprised. That works out well according to my approach, that there is a different level. Orla is Halacha L'Moshe Misinai, and Kilayim is only rabbinic. But, according to you, and if you look at the last two words of this Ovid, it says Ela L'Ditcha, but according to you that both of them are basically rabbinic in nature, something that the public accepts as common practice, it can't be termed any greater than something of a rabbinic level of requirement. So there's no difference between the two. Why in the Tanaic sources that we're about to read do you see that in fact there is a difference between the two? Now the Gemara. So Ula turns to Rav Yehuda and says, Bishma Didi, well, it works out well according to me, that I said, Amin Alach Moshe Misinai, Hainu Deshoni Lon, Bein Sofek Orla, L'Sofek Kilayim Disnan, and here we have the sources in which you will see a difference between the two. Sofek Orla, if there is a doubt arising concerning whether a particular fruit is an orla fruit, it's from the first 3 years of the tree's production, or it's from an older tree. Ba'aretz aser. Well, if you have such a fruit in the land of Israel, it's forbidden. It's a sofek d'oraisa in Eretz Yisrael. It's a sofek of a Torah level law in Eretz Yisrael. Besuria muter. If you have a sofek concerning a fruit, whether it's oral or not, and you're in Surya. Surya is a region of land that's adjacent to Eretz Yisrael, north of Eretz Yisrael. It was conquered by David HaMelech before the rest of Eretz Yisrael was completely conquered, so it's called Kibush Yachid. And according to the approach of this source, Kibush Yachid Lo Shmei Kibush, it's not considered formally annexed to Eretz Yisrael on a Torah level. So a fruit that's Sofek Arla, you would be in Surya, you'd be entitled to eat it. Bechutzalaretz Yored V'lokeach Ubilvad Shelo Yirenu Locate. These are easy words in and of themselves to translate, but that isn't going to help too much in what it really means. So we look at Rashi. Yored, we have a little star in the Rashi to help you find it quickly, more than halfway down the Rashi column. Yored in Chutz Laretz is a region further out than Surya, beyond Surya. Jewish communities in Chutz Laretz, regarding a Sofek Orla, you have a fruit, you have a trees that are growing, and you don't know whether this is an Orla tree or not. So in Chutz Laretz, it says, the Rashi says, Yored Yisrael, v'lokeach min oivi kichovim, halokeit mipardes, sheyesh bo netios, yaldus zekenis. A Jew can descend into an orchard and buy from a Gentile fruit that the Gentile picked. And you know that amongst the trees that are growing there are yesh bo netios yaldus uzakenus, v'Yisrael yodea shehu nichnas sham v'lokeit l'chatchila. And the Jew knows that the idol worshiper, that the Gentile, went into the field and picked from it. The Jew is aware that you're dealing with fruits picked by the Gentile in a field that has orla trees, but also has adult trees, older trees as well. So the expression Yored v'lokeach u'bavad shelo yirenu locate, Rashi goes on, u'bavad shelo yirenu Yisrael. The restriction here is that the Jew should not see kishu, when the Gentile loikate min orla, when he's the Bach explains, when he's cutting from the sofek orla, because any given tree, it's not clear whether it's an orla tree or not. So we're allowing the Jew to go into the field and buy from the Gentile who's already harvested from these trees. Amongst them are orla trees. But there is a restriction that the Jew should not watch the Gentile picking from the trees. So you can see that regarding orla, we'll emphasize the restriction as we've dashed underlined. Ubavad shelo yirenu locate. We don't allow the Jew who's going to purchase from the Gentile the sofek orla. We don't allow him to watch the Gentile do the picking. V'ilu gabi kilayim. We continue in the Gemara. Tanan, regarding kilayim, and here we're describing there are vines, and there are vines, and amongst the vines you have vegetation, you have vegetables growing amongst the vines. And you have a similar situation of vegetables being sold, and you're not sure whether the vegetables that you're buying are from those that grew in proximity of the vines or grew separately. So you have a sofek kilayim issue at hand. The Gemara says, Kerem HaNatua Yerek, a vineyard that has been planted with vegetables amongst them. V'yerek nimkar chutzalo, and vegetables are being sold outside the vineyard. Now, the vegetables that are being sold outside the vineyard, did they come from those vegetables growing amongst the vines or grew separately? You don't know. So, ba'aretz osur, in Eretz Yisrael, you cannot buy those vegetables. Besuria mutter. If you have vegetables that were already picked and they're being sold outside such a vineyard, you can buy the vegetables. But chutzlaretz, and here we want to focus once again on chutzlaretz, yored velocate, ubavat shelo yukot biyad. So it's rather obscure, but it means a Gentile can go into that field and pick vegetables with the Jew watching. The only objection is that the Jew himself shouldn't pick vegetables from there. Let's take a look at the Rashi. Yored ovi kuchovim velokate min hakilayim mamish umochir lechover. The Gentile can pick from those vegetables growing next to the vines. Those are called kilayim vegetables. Sell them to the chover, sell them to the Jew. Ubavashilo yukot hechover atzmo biyad. The only restriction is that the Jew shouldn't himself collect or harvest the kilayim vegetables. Ve'im Esau, the orla, Rashi continues, if it's so, the orla b'chutzlaretz divrei sofrim v'lo halacha Moshe Mi'Sinai, that it's purely rabbinic and not halacha Moshe Mi'Sinai, or Ula says, then my shno de achmi b'sofik orla misofik kilayim. Why is there a greater sense of restriction by the Sofik Orla than the Sofik Kilayim? So we go back to the Gemara. Ula continues his question. Elo l'iditcha. But according to you, Rav Yehuda, that both Sofik Orla and Sofik Kilayim in Chutz La'aretz are purely rabbinic. Nisni, then as far as these sources are concerned, we're continuing at the top of Daf Lamed Tes. Nisni, oi zeh v'zeh yored v'lokeach, oi zeh v'zeh yored v'lokate. Both sources should have had the same treatment of how the Jew acquires those fruits in Chutzlar. The Gemara says, you know, you're right. Your objection is well taken. So Ha'omar Le Shmuel. Now we dash the line Shmuel because Shmuel was the authority that Rav Yehuda was representing. Ula was directing his question at Rav Yehuda, but Rav Yehuda represented Shmuel. So Rav Yehuda says, in fact, Ha'omar Le Shmuel Rav Onan. Shmuel says to Rav Onan, Tani, when you present these sources, you should state them. Oy zeh v'zeh yored v'lokeach. Make them consistent. Either both of them are in the yored v'lokeach fashion, or zeh v'zeh yored v'lokate. Here the Gemara is a bit terse, but as we explained before, what those phrases meant. They should both be the same. Both sources. Both the way you deal with the Sofik Orla and the way you deal with the Kilayim in Chutzarts should have been taught the same. More bray de Ravno masni le lekula. More takes the position of leniency and teaches both of them, meaning even the Sofik Orlo case, ze veze yored velokate ubavashlo yukot biyad. According to that approach, the Sofik Orlo in Chutzarts would allow the Jew to watch the goy picking from the trees, and the only restriction being that the Jew shouldn't pick himself. As we go on in the Gemara, we're going to see a double underline marking, and on the side under the Mivneh heading, we indicate these are Rabbonim Shekilu Ba'orlov Chutzarts, a series of rabbis that took a lenient approach toward Orla outside the land of Israel. Omar Le Levi Lishmuel. Arioch was a nickname for Shmuel. Safek Li Vano Echol. That means, cut for me, but not in front of me. Cut on my behalf, but not in front of me. So that when I get it, it'll be a Safek. So Rashi on the second line from the top says Safekli Lekot Shelo Befonai, cut from the trees, from Orla trees, fruit. Just make sure I don't see. She has Safek Etzli. When I get it, I will be in doubt. Vano Echol, and I will eat it. Uber Orla Koin. We're talking about Orla. We continue. Rav Avyo veRabo bar Rav Chonon misapku svuki lahadodi. Each one gave the other in chutz laaretz orla fruit, so that each one, when they were holding the fruit, they didn't know for sure whether it was really orla. Amri Harifi de Pumbadisa. This is a title. Rashi tells you the name of these rabbis that are referred to by Harif, and most of the sharp ones of Pumbadisa are Eifo and Avimi, the sons of Rachba. So Harif and Pumbadisa say, Ein Orla b'chutzal aretz. There is no law of Orla binding in chutzal aretz. That would that's going very far. That means you could have a tree that you have that has not produced fruit for even for 3 years, and it's first or second year of fruit production, and you go ahead and eat it. Sholcha Rav Yehuda lekamei de Rav Yochanan. Rav Yehuda sent this opinion to Rav Yochanan. Sholach lei. Rav Yochanan sent back. Stom sfeika v'abed vada. V'achreiz al perusem shirim giniza. And Rabbi Yochanan continues with more on that. But before we go further, let's explain so far what he has said. Rabbi Yochanan says, Stom sfeika. Stom means keep things quiet, cover it up. Sofek orla in chutz laaretz is mutter. There's a heter for Sofek. But don't publicize it. Don't teach thusly in public. Abed vada means destroy, get rid of that which is definite orla. Rashi across from here says, V'abed vada, hayo v'hein mekilim, since they are so lenient, al tatir lohem lesapek ze etzel ze, don't allow one to supply the other. Ela abed oisam haperus biadayim. Destroy them. That each one might have been picking orla and giving it to the other, but what they were picking was definite orla. Get rid of it. Rabbi Yochanan also said, "Hachreiz al perusem shinum giza," and announce. Hachreiz is announce regarding these individuals that are mekil. With regard to Ula, with regard to Orla, announce that their fruits need to be destroyed. Geniza means buried, put out of circulation. We continue in the Gemara with Rabbi Yochanan's comment. V'chol ha'oimer, Rabbi Yochanan says, anyone who says, Ein Orla b'chutz laretz, that there is no Orla b'chutz laretz, and here is something very harsh. He says, Lo yehe lo nin v'neched, such a person will have no sons nor grandchildren. Mashlich chevel begirl bekal Hashem, that will have any share in the community of God. So you can see that Rabbi Yochanan was very antagonistic, very harsh upon those that say that there's no orla in chutz la'aretz. Ve'inhu keman savrua, they who were in fact lenient, based on whom, they must have had some Tanaic basis for having such a leniency. Answer, ki ha desanya. The Harifa de Pumbadisa can find a Tanaic basis in the following. The source says, Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi Omer, Mishum Rabbi Yossi ben Dormasko, Shomar Mishum Rabbi Yossi Aglid, Shomar Mishum Rabbi Yochanan ben Uri, Shomar Mishum Rabbi Eliezer HaGodol, Einor Lo B'chutz Loretz. So here you have a whole line of Tanoim going back to Rabbi Eliezer HaGodol, who says there is no Orlo in Chutz Loretz. Now we've dashed underline Rabbi Eliezer's name, and that has significance as we go on in the Gemara. But in the meantime, if you were to stop here, you have a solid Tanaic basis for a position of extreme leniency, namely, there's no Orla in Chutz Loretz. The Gemara asks, Velo, there's no Orla in Chutz Loretz, according to Rabbi Eliezer, Vo'ana Tanan. Our Mishnah said, Rabbi Eliezer, Omer, Af HaChodosh. Preceding Rabbi Eliezer, the Tanakhama said that Orla and Kilayim are binding in Chutz Loretz. Rabbi Eliezer didn't argue with that. It seems that regarding Orla and Kilayim, Rabbi Eliezer was in agreement that they're binding in Chutz Loretz. All Rabbi Eliezer did was he said something Af HaChodesh. He made reference to those. We had a long discussion in our previous year about what Rabbi Eliezer was trying to accomplish with regard to Chodesh. But by saying Af HaChodesh, he's showing agreement with what the previous opinion, what the Tanakhama said regarding Orla, that it's binding in Chutz Loretz. So how can you have Rabbi Eliezer here saying Ein Orla B'Chutz Loretz? So the Gemara says that the Mishnah needs to be reread. Tani Chodosh. Not Af HaChodosh. Rabbi Eliezer says Chodosh is Noheg in Chutz La'aretz. Chodosh is Noheg in Chutz La'aretz because the word Moshav appears by Chodosh, which indicates Kol Mokom Shatem Yoshvim. But Orla? That's Noheg only in Eretz Yisrael. Just like the source that we cited two lines above had said, which serves as the basis of Harifi the Bobadisa. Omar Rabbi Asi, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Orla B'chutz Loretz, Halacha L'Moshe Misinai. This is an opinion that we have already seen. We have a little star directing you back to Lamed Chesomet Beis, where you can see Ula quoted Rabbi Yochanan as saying just that. The Gemara continues. Omar Le Rabbi Zera Ravasi. V'ha Tnan Sofek Orla Ba'oretz Osir Besurya Mutar. If you look in Rashi, Besurya Mutar V'i Vado B'chutzers, if certain Orla, if definite Orla in Chutz La'aretz was Halocha, meaning Halocha L'Moshe Misinai, Hechi Mezalzalina B'sfeka, how can we be so lenient with regard to a matter of doubt concerning Orla? And yet, we have a source that says Besurya Mutar, that Sofek Orla in Surya is allowed. Ishtoimeim Kishoa Chada. So Ravasi was taken aback for a moment, but then he answered, Amalei, Eima, Kach Nemar, this is the Halacha Moshinai. Halacha Moshinai. Part of Halacha Moshinai is Sveika Mutar Vada Aser. That when you have a matter of doubt concerning Orla outside of Eretz Yisrael, the Halacha L'Moshe Misanai tells us, the oral tradition says, you can be lenient. When it's Vadai Orla, then, even outside the land of Israel, you have to be restrictive. You have to be Machmir, and Vadai Orla is prohibited. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.